This is the Dairy Download, brought to you by Blimling & Associates and the International Dairy Foods Association, where we offer extra sharp market and policy insights on dairy. I'm your host, Phil Plord.
And I'm your co-host, Kathleen Wolfley.
Today's episode is all about butter. Who doesn't love a little butter? Or for that matter, a lot of butter. Our guests today are certainly fans. We'll talk butter and other dairy products with a procurement director for one of America's biggest grocery store chains and a development chef at a major national steakhouse chain. We'll get to that in a few minutes. First, a big thank you to our listeners. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe through your favorite platform. And why not tell a friend? We'd also love your feedback. You can email us at dairydownload@idfa.org. Okay, Kathleen, let's get back to butter. Did you ever see the movie Julie and Julia?
I did.
Yeah, it's that movie that about the gal who writes a blog about cooking through the Julia Child cookbook, you know, every day. And there's a great scene about butter in that movie. Give a listen to this.
I cooked artichokes with hollandaise sauce, which is melted butter that's been whipped into a frenzy with egg yolks until it's died and gone to heaven. And let me say this, is there anything better than butter? Think it over. Every time you taste something that's delicious beyond imagining and you say, what is in this? The answer is always going to be butter. The day there's a meteorite heading toward the Earth and we have 30 days to live, I am going to spend it eating butter. Here's my final word on the subject. You can never have too much butter.
You know, Phil, I think that 2020 would have been the perfect year to cook your way through the Julia Child cookbook. But with all this talk about butter, I am getting hungry, so let's get on to the markets. Today is December 9th, and block cheddar market closed at $1.65, up 7 cents. Barrel cheese inched up to $1.42, up 2 cents on the week. Butter closed at $1.52, up 6 cents. And the 9-fat dry milk market slid to $1.14, down a penny. So, Phil, what do you think the most important thing is right now?
Well, Kathleen, I've been following the ongoing stimulus negotiations with some interest, not least because earlier this week, word was circulating that they were talking about a pretty big number of dollars going to ag. $26 billion was a number that was tossed around by some earlier in the week. I think the number keeps changing. But what really had my interest was talk about food boxes maybe being part of the story. And nothing gets our markets quite so excited these days than a little food box talk. We'll see where it goes. I don't think anything's assured. The negotiations could take many twists and turns. But I think that stimulus package is really important on a number of levels. What about you?
For me, the closure of restaurants or the closure of in-restaurant dining and pullback in number of people or capacity in restaurants is a pretty big deal. Though food service has made a lot of investments this year in off-premises dining, I still think that the uncertainty across the restaurant space is going to and is having an impact in the markets today. That kind of ties into my stat of the week. I saw a survey from the National Restaurant Association that suggests that we could see another 10,000 restaurants close between now and the end of the year. That would take permanent closures of restaurants up to 120,000 restaurants here in 2020. How about you, Phil?
Well, you know, my stat of the week is also related to that story. Last week, we got the employment situation report from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it showed that the unemployment level in the leisure and hospitality space was at 15%. Now, that's down from 29% at the worst of it, but still 15% unemployment in that leisure and hospitality segment that includes restaurants. And basically 11% of U.S. jobs were in that segment pre-pandemic. So a big deal and something to keep an eye on. Okay, Kathleen, fearless prediction time. You go first this week.
All right. I went with a softball in the last podcast, so we're going to go a little bit more strongly in this one. I've been thinking a lot about China recently. And my fearless prediction is that China milk powder imports in the first quarter will expand by greater than 30% year over year. And you, Phil?
Well, that would be certainly notable. You know, I was on a client call a couple of weeks ago, and they were pressing for predictions and wanted to know where the price of cheese was going to be at year end. And I just finally blurted out, 157 and a quarter. So I'm going to go with block cheddar cheese closing the year out at 157 and a quarter. How's that for precision, Kathleen?
That is very precise. Well, Phil, let's get to our first guest, Mike Brown.
It's a pleasure today to have Mike Brown with us. Mike is the director of dairy supply chain at the Kroger Company, a role he's held since 2015. He's also worked at Glambia, Dairy Gold, and National All Jersey. Here's the deal. If there is such a thing as a dairy economist fantasy league, Mike would be my number one draft pick. Mike, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Well, thank you, Phil, and thanks for the kind comments. I don't know who's paying you for that, but it wasn't me.
Well, I'm not sure that there's a dairy economist fantasy league, but I think it's a heck of a concept. So speaking of that world, coming from a dairy economics and dairy manufacturing background in some of your previous roles, what has surprised you the most about the retail side of the street?
I think the most is both the seasonal and weekly variation in sales and the big role that promotions play on volumes and the planning that it takes in order to meet that need. I would say would be the biggest one, because we all look at those monthly numbers of how much product's been sold, what commercial disappearance looks like. But when you get into the details of running a store, you can have triple to quadruple the sales in a week, depending on a promotion. So it takes a lot of planning and, frankly, a bit of cold storage space from time to time. So that's probably been the biggest surprise.
So, Mike, how does the dairy department fit into the overall Kroger framework?
Well, it's a really big part of our business. Kroger runs 35 manufacturing plants along with its 2,800 grocery stores. And we make everything from dog food to spaghetti sauce to bread and bakery goods to, of course, dairy. We run 19 dairy plants, 16 of them do fluid milk and other products. One's dedicated to ice cream. And then we have two plants that do cut and wrap cheese. So one of the things that makes us a little unique is that we are manufacturers of a lot of what we sell. These are all company brand products, of course. And that gives us a couple of things. A, we have better control over supply, which can be good or bad, depending on what things look like. But we have a lot more control because we do manufacture ourselves. It gives us more control over quality. And we, to some degree, shape our own destination. And also, of course, we can better control our own costs. So it's a huge part. What we really find is it is very much a driver of store loyalty. If you have good quality milk, good quality cheese, people will come to Kroger and they'll pick up their laundry detergent and their other products as well.
And we certainly saw, upheaval earlier this year when the COVID hit and people flocked to grocery stores, and it was sort of like a massive snowstorm every day and people, stocking up and not going to restaurants. How has that impacted butter sales this year from your perspective? And then I think importantly, do you and/or Kroger expect these trends to persist post pandemic? Have we turned a corner into something different in terms of the consumer and their relationships?
Oh boy, it affected us in a big way. I mean, sales are up certain weeks, hundreds of percents. And interestingly, butter has, and all the dairy has led percent year over year growth. And what's really interesting, a lot of that has been unsalted butter, which we think is a function of baking at home. Flour sales are up as well. Sugar sales are up. Unsalted, of course, eggs are up. They've been up crazy. What's made butter really kind of unique from the standpoint of not, I think, just Kroger, but the entire industry, is that even though consumer packaged butter, basically, four quarters in a cardboard box, have been fairly tight as far as manufacturing constraints, butter has not been. We've had plenty of butter in the market. I mean, I understand over half of all butterfat ends up in food service. So as a result of that, there's been plenty of butter around. What that's also meant is we've had a lot of promotions. Whereas cheese got expensive this summer, butter really, really has stayed well below the five-year average all year long. Well, when you're trying to run promotions or encourage people into your store, that makes it a logical product. So we've seen overall retail prices for butter have actually dropped this year slightly, and that's because of the availability of product. And sales are of any, I can't give specifics, but of any broad dairy category, butter sales are up by far the most of cheese, ice cream, fluid products. They're by far the most.
Speaking of promotions and how they factor into the mix, I've always been amazed at how long the cycles are. How far ahead are you planning for promotional activity, just generally speaking, into the big holidays? I mean, when do you start on Easter, for example?
Oh, we started on Easter last May, frankly, right after Easter. You take a look what were the changes and trends. Obviously, this year, because of COVID, it's very difficult to determine what those really were. But we start way, way ahead. And on butter in particular, let's just use dairy, and it's not just butter. But because of the seasonality of demand relative supply, I mean, no one's going to build. Basically, fourth quarter butter sales are double what they are any other quarter retail. And, you know, no one's going to build a factory to make twice as much butter the last 3 months of the year. And no one's figured out how to get a cow to make twice as much fat the last quarter of the year. So as a result of that, and plus you're competing with all the other class two products like sour creams and such, cream cheese. We all have what we call build plans. So we plan, we buy butter ahead, we freeze it. We work with our supply partners to make sure that they have adequate supply for fourth quarter. What makes it particularly interesting is that, is of course, with promotions, we don't know what each other is doing. And so we tend to get more aggressive fourth quarter. Sales have been great. Dairy has performed extremely well under the stress of this last year. People are appreciating it in their diets. I think longer term, we think there will be some long-term benefit from what's happened this last year with COVID. People maybe just rediscovering cooking at home, but we don't expect it to remain at the kind of levels we've seen this year because it's been a great year for grocery, needless to say.
Given the fact that demand has been so strong and supplies have been a bit inconsistent, or at least your build plan has probably not gone as you planned it in January or even in late 2019, how easy or hard has it been to keep butter and other dairy products on the shelf?
It has been a lot of work. One of the challenges we've had this year that's complicated, frankly, has been the food box program, because we've seen a lot of those finished products, cheese as well as butter, move into those programs, which have affected not so much the price of butter, but the capacity for retail packaged butter in the market. So we have planned ahead. We've bought ahead. If you want to make a customer mad, they don't like high prices, but they like out of stocks on sale items even less. So we work very hard to keep them in stock.
Going back to the holiday demand thing for a second, you mentioned that, you know, butter sales are usually much more aggressive in the second part of the year than the first part of the year, given the holidays. And that's certainly true in normal years. Do you have an opinion or expectation around whether there'll be a lot more incremental demand growth this year, given that we've already been baking a lot at home for several months? Are we going to make that many more cookies at home? I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Well, if we sell enough Peloton bikes, people can eat more cookies. That's kind of my view. We're big fans of Peloton. But seriously, we see lift during holidays, 4th of July, Memorial Day, of course, Easter. It's still the same percent kind of lift. We're seeing butter sales lift the last few weeks that have been just tremendous. But as far as our sales, I think the main thing we would see is, first of all, baskets remain bigger as far as shopping carts. Does that mean in January they're going to say, oh my God, I've got 20 pounds of cheese and butter I got to eat? Maybe, but we generally find if people buy it, they consume it. So they're out to buy it again.
What lessons have you learned from COVID, and how do you apply those lessons to the way that Kroger procures and markets butter and other dairy products going forward?
I think the big thing is cushion, planning ahead. I think what we've learned is a couple things. Paying 3 cents more to have it in stock or having a little extra inventory is just good business, because if you want to disappoint a customer, don't have it. I think the other thing we've learned is that how do you plan for 2021 after 2020? We're almost like when I learned in economics that hot dog sales go up when the economy's weak. You know, we're a little bit the same way as far as stock, because we certainly, there's certainly been some fluctuation, but overall, sales remain very, very strong. I think part of it, we've probably done a little better job with out of stocks than some of our competitors, because we plan quicker and work for it, and having our own manufacturing gives us flex.
Has it been really difficult to convince Kroger and its shareholders, or, you know, whoever, that, you know, paying more or paying for that cushion is worth it?
Well, again, a couple things. If your sales, you know, you look at national grocery sales, and we are certainly, I think we're above trend. I mean, when your sales are up several percent or more in our case, you can afford some of that cost of goods. That doesn't mean that we sign long-term contracts to pay X more, but on spot, we have the blessing to pay what we can get. Like, for example, we bought some butter capacity for this fall from a couple of very good vendors we worked with a long time, because they had some room and we wanted to make sure we had it. So that's what you do. Long term, I think we'll be paying more attention to it than we have in the past.
Well, Mike, as always, delightful to speak with you today. Thank you for being on the Dairy Download.
Well, my pleasure. Appreciate the opportunity. Love working with you guys. And if you have a Kroger nearby, please come see us. Thank you.
Let's shift gears and get the restaurant perspective from Jessica Tomlinson.
We are excited to have Jessica Tomlinson with us today. Jessica is the corporate executive chef of research and development for Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. Fleming's is a concept with 65 restaurants in the U.S. and is part of the Bloomin' Brands family that includes Outback Steakhouse and Carrabba's Italian Grill. As a wife and mother, Chef Jessica hopes not only to continue her journey of food, but to share that love of food with her daughter as her mentors have shared with her. Who knows, maybe inspiring the next great family chef. Jessica, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
Well, I would say that I am our family's very mediocre chef, never more so than during the pandemic. And I saw in your bio that your love of cooking sort of began when you were 17 and learned how to make risotto.
The dish risotto, what drew me to it was taking rice, which is very humbling and very inexpensive ingredient, and turning into this luxurious dish that has lots of butter and heavy cream and finishing with Parmesan cheese that you can turn around and sell it for $30, $40 a dish.
What is your background in research and development, and how do you apply it to your current role?
So with research and development, it's a completely different type of role as versus being an executive chef in a restaurant. It's really taught me to be more disciplined about the dishes I create. I have to think about them on a larger scale, not just one restaurant, one night, for the night. I have to think of it. Can all 65 locations recreate this dish day in and day out?
That brings to mind another question. In normal times, how much time do you spend on new products, new menu items versus tweaking the old ones?
Yeah, pre-COVID, I was spending, I would say, 70% on new innovation and 30% on tweaking menu items. And now it has flipped.
What's that flip taking you towards?
I think the flip has been really simplification. Let's focus on what we do well. And in Fleming's, that's cooking steaks. We were a little hesitant about doing the off-premise, but we were pleasantly surprised that our guests are loyal and they're brand loyal and they still want to have Fleming's at home, which has been fantastic.
So how has that changed the way that you do your job specifically?
It's changed a lot. I have to really, when I'm creating dishes, I have to really think not only about in dining, but also how is this food going to travel? Is there a crispy component that should be wrapped separately so it doesn't get soggy next to the mushrooms? It's challenging, but it makes me think on a much more thoughtful, mindful level. But it's also been very rewarding to hear some of our guests share their experiences, enjoying a wine dinner at home, doing date night at home with their favorite bottle of wine and one of our steaks.
And what's the, I mean, are we figuring that it's a 15-minute journey that it's going to hold up 30 minutes? Is there a rule of thumb that you guys use in terms of measuring how long you want things to hold together?
I'm measuring anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour. With Fleming's, most of our locations are in suburban areas. So that food might be traveling for a good 45 minutes. So those are the factors that I'm taking in place. And I just also like to err on the side of more rather than less, because also I don't know if that guest is going to go home and eat it right away. Something might come up and that food's sitting on their counter for a half an hour. So I like to provide them instructions with, okay, if you're going to enjoy this right away, do X, Y, Z. But if you're going to reheat this, then do this as well. So just trying to take out those variables as much as we can.
You figure that this is going to continue, the off-prem boom that we're seeing in places like Fleming's, is it going to continue?
I think it will. I think that you will still have a good percentage of people who are not comfortable with dining in, and that we will continue to do off-premise dining, because this, for Fleming's, this has been a completely new revenue stream for us, and which has done well. This has proven that we can thrive off-premise.
So what role does butter play in developing dishes and menus for a steakhouse concept, both from in-restaurant dining and off-prem business?
Well, personally, for me, I love butter. I am a classically trained chef, and in French cuisine, there's tons of butter and tons of heavy cream. So it's my personal favorite, one of my favorite ingredients, and especially in a steakhouse. When you think of this luxurious steak and you're going to put a huge dab of butter, and when it gets to the guest, that butter is just melted down the steak and all you want to do is just tear right into it. So for me, butter is huge, but butter is also extremely versatile. So like I said, you can do a butter, you can finish a steak with a butter. And for us, we have our classic steak butter, which is lightly melted butter. And then we also offer three different flavored butters. So we do a Bernays butter, which is a play on the classic Bernays sauce, which has that tarragon and those and that vinegar and the shallots. We have a smoked chili butter, which is my personal favorite on the ribeye because it adds this really nice, intense, smoky depthness. And then we do a horseradish herb, which horseradish and steak is a classic pairing, but folded in with the butter and the herbs just kind of brightens and cuts through that richness of the steak.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, butter is just, it's such a great ingredient. I mean, you can use it for baking. You can, like I said, for savory applications. I love using brown butter. So you simmer the butter and you're caramelizing those milk solids in there. So you're going to get this super nutty and caramelized aroma. And when you taste it, it just intensifies that butter flavor, but also whatever you're putting in. So example, I'll do like a brown butter pecan cookie. And you bite into it and just you get all these like caramelized notes, but there's no caramel in there. It's just those caramelized milk solids in the butter. And it's just so good.
I'm getting very hungry. talking
to you. Yeah, that might happen.
If you take something off of the menu, it's something that people really liked. Do you hear about it very quickly?
Oh, yes, I do. We call it like the bread gate of 2018, where we actually try to take these spreads off and just replace it with whipped butter. And wow, I heard it for a good 2 to 3 months, and we put it back on, and people were so excited that they were back.
Don't we also do a little champagne butter as part of the bread that comes out? Like there's that tapenade, and there's is it champagne infused butter that comes out with the bread at Fleming's?
Yeah, we do a champagne brie, and then we do
champagne brie. Okay,
that's cool. We do a seasonal one as well. Right now we're in a pumpkin, so the second you sit down, you're starting with butter at Fleming's.
What are you most excited about in the realm of restaurant cooking? I mean, I get it. The COVID thing has been front and center, and you've learned a lot of new tricks, I suppose, and taught a lot of new tricks in these past 6 months. But what are you most excited about going forward?
We need to evolve with what our guests want. And if we don't, we're going to be left behind and they're going to go somewhere else. So to be competitive, what else does our guests want? What's the gap in our business and how can we fill that?
Well, Jessica, we really appreciate your time today. This was a really mouthwatering discussion. Thanks so much for being a part of the Dairy Download.
Yes, thank you both. It was a pleasure to be on here.
That's a wrap for today's show. As always, we want to thank our production team, Matt Herrick, Michael Gooden, and Andrew Jerome at IDFA, and Corey Romero over here at Blimling & Associates. If you are interested in what Kathleen and I do for our day jobs, check us out at www.dairy.com. If you want to share feedback on our show, drop us a line at dairydownload@idfa.org. And be sure to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Download. Until next time, stay sharp.